the highlights and some of the failures of the TWSTED program. And then I'll get into the string theory, tell you how to construct a TWSTED 0,2 model, which will be a familiar story to most string theorists. So I'll construct the action, construct the vertex operators, check that the theory is nominally free, show you various things about how you promote the signal model to a string theory. Then I'll talk a little bit about what happens about the geometric structures that you've got in these TWSTED models, what happens when you move beyond a sort of perturbative picture of a string theory. And if there's time at the end, I'll talk about how this heterotic picture is related to the original TWSTED strings of Berkowitz and Witten. But we may not have time. Okay, so what was the TWSTED program? Well, it begins with a geometric correspondence between points in a space-time M are related to holomorphic lines, CP1s, in TWSTED space, or projective TWSTED space, PT. And the simplest place to see this, the place that everyone starts, is just in flat space-time. If you complexify flat space-time, you get C4, and you have four holomorphic coordinates x, and instead of the normal sort of Lorentz index mu, you can replace that by a pair of spinner indices A and A dots. If you'd like, you can think of taking this X mu and dotting it into the Pauli sigma matrices in the unit matrix. But in any case, you just replace X mu by X A A dot. And TWSTED space, in this case, is again a copy of C4, and its coordinates are now Z alpha, where alpha runs from 1 to 4, and it's traditional to split those into two pairs. Well, for good reason, you split those into two pairs. Omega A and pi A dot, which where again the A and the A dot are the same indices as you have in there, and they run from 1 to 2. And the relation between the two spaces, it's a bit of a coincidence in flat space that these two spaces are both copies of C4, but in general, the relation between the two spaces is expressed in this incidence relation, which just says that omega is I x pi. Now, what that means is if you fix a point x in space-time, so we fix x, then In the TWSTED space, you look for solution Z, or omega pi, that satisfy this equation with your chosen X. And if you find one such point, if you find one set of points, omega A, then because you can, if you fix X, then this is the equation of a line in projective TWSTED space. So we've got two equations here. There's a free index A, which runs from 1 to 2. So we've got two conditions on four variables, but they're also defined only up to a scaling. So there's two conditions on three variables, effectively, and that gives you a line. Moreover, if you have two points in space-time, X and Y, if their separation is null, that tells you that the line X and the line Y in TWSTED space intersects, and it's easy to see that because any solution of this equation with fixed omega and pi with the chosen x, any solution of this equation with a fixed x and another solution of the equation with fixed y to be solved separately, you just subtract the two and you find that x minus y dotted into pi has to be zero, and that tells you the determinant of the matrix x minus y has to be zero unless all the pi's are zero, and that tells you that X minus Y is null if you compute the determinant of that matrix. Going the other way around, if we now fix a point in projective TWSTED space, so we fix omega and pi, and we look for how many solutions we can find in terms of X's, but if you find one solution, X, then you can always add to it any multiple of pi, because pi dotted into pi, you dot with the anti-symmetric epsilon symbol, and you get zero. So we've got an equation of a plane here in the complexified Minkowski space, it's usually known as an alpha plane. So it's just a geometric correspondence between space-time on the one hand and TWSTED space on the other hand. And the idea of the TWSTED program was to reformulate all of fundamental physics in terms of objects on TWSTED space. Now, why that might or might not be a good idea, you'll get a different answer to that question depending on who you ask. But an uncontroversial answer that I think everyone would agree with is that if you manage to do it, you're bound to learn new things that were not obvious from the point of view of the space-time picture. So one of the early successes of the TWSTED program, one of the early successes of this translation between the two spaces was this result known as the Penrose transform, which describes a very clear description of classical fields, on-shell, massless classical fields, in terms of objects on TWSTED space. And strictly, it's these cohomology groups. So I'll explain a little bit more in a minute how this works. But the point is that for any wave equation for a massless free field for Felicity H, you get an object in this twister space. And going the other way round, you see locally an object like this is just represented as a function of a certain homogeneity, the homogeneity in the brackets. So in particular, for a scalar field where the Felicity is obviously zero, we just have a function of homogeneity minus two. And you don't need to solve any equation or find any Green's functions or anything at all like that. You just write down any function you care to name of appropriate homogeneity and insert it into this contour integral. And this, so the idea here is we have a line in twister space, CP1 in twister space, representing the point x. And we've got a function of homogeneity minus two, so it's bound to have singularity somewhere on this. Well, since it's got negative weight in the z, it's bound to have singularity somewhere on this CP1. And traditionally, it'll have them in, if you choose it reasonably, it'll have two separated regions of singularity, in the simple case, just two simple poles. And you then choose a contour to go in between these two simple poles, and you can do this contour integral explicitly, and you get a function of the space-time field. You get a function of space-time from doing that. And it's automatic that this function satisfies the field equation, satisfies this, the massless Klein-Gordon equation in space-time. And the reason is that if you look how d by dx acts on functions of twisters restricted to a twister line, then just by the chain rule it acts like this. And so when you take this box inside the integral, you've got two powers of this, so the pi's are contracted and the d by d omegas are contracted, but pi contracted with itself is automatically zero. So merely rewriting this operator in terms of twisted variables tells you that the thing is bound to be zero. Just by representing the phi as a twister function, you're guaranteed that it will satisfy the wave equation. Of course, the fact that this is a cohomology group here just expresses the fact that you don't really care too much explicitly what the function is, you more just care about what the residues are, what the values of the residues are. Okay, so that's for free fields. But twister theory, even in the old days, went a long way beyond free fields. And the main two ideas here were something called the nonlinear graviton, which was a work of Penrose, and the Ward transform. And they extend the solutions of free field equations to solutions of the Einstein equations and Yang-Mills equations, which are anti-self dual. So in the Yang-Mills case, an anti-self dual solution is just an instanton, as you know. In the Einstein case, it can be many things, but in particular, it means that the Weyl tensor of the space-time is anti-self-dual. And examples of things that you get out of this in the twister constriction are the Tier Wards and the ADHM construction of Yang-Mills instantons in the Yang-Mills case. In the gravitational cases, you also know twister spaces for, well, even without doing this, you know the twister spaces for conformally flat space-time, so interesting space-times like this. But via this construction, you also know for all the asymptotically locally Euclidean gravitational instantons, you also know it for PP waves. You know it for more complicated spaces as well nowadays. And again, I should emphasize that it isn't simply a matter here of taking a known space-time solution and translating it into twister space. In this case, and in certain of these cases, actually the twister space construction came first. It was easier to construct it in twister space. And again, the reason it was easier is stems from the fact that I showed you on the last transparency that you don't need to solve any equations in the twister space. You merely write down free data. You just chose any old function before in the pre-case. There's a similar story going on here. There are higher dimensional analogs of the twister transform, in particular in the sort of Euclidean context. If you're interested in studying quaternionic Kähler manifolds, and one place these crop up in string theory is they're the moduli spaces of either the complex structure parameters in the type 2a compactifications or the Kähler parameters in the type 2b compactifications, so the other way around to the usual. The moduli spaces of those on compactifications on a Calabi-Yau, the moduli space is a quaternionic Kähler. And the simplest way to understand the properties of a quaternionic Kähler manifold is to look at its twister space. There's always a complex manifold, which is a P1 bundle over the quaternionic Kähler space, and that's the twister space. And then there's a sort of non-projective twister space above that as well, which is hyper-Kähler. And people like Annie Nitzko and Boris Pierlein are actively investigating this in the context of extreme black holes in supergravities. And there are deep relations of these Yang-Mills equations and reductions to these Yang-Mills equations to integrable systems, and this is an area that I don't know very much about, but it's certainly been one of the main themes of investigation of the twister program. However, all of these things are all anti-self-dual. This restriction that either the Yang-Mills curvature tensor or the Weyl tensor is anti-self-dual is an extremely strong restriction. It's a very narrow class of classical solutions that you're getting by that way. And there's never been, the big failure of the twister program is that there's never been a systematic way to encode non-anti-self dual interactions in the twister space, even at the level of perturbation theory. So not only can you not, if I give you a general Einstein four manifold, not only can you not tell me what the twister space of that is in general, but you can't even do it at the level of perturbation theory. You can't even tell me what happens if you scatter various gravitons of different helicities. Now, twister string theory really provides a completely new angle on this, and certainly if you're a twister theorist, that's the main reason for being interested in twister string theory. So the point is that the cohomology classes that we saw were relevant for free fields in the Penrose transform correspond, in a way that I'll explain later, to states in a topological string theory, brackets around the topological. They correspond to states in the string theory. You can write down vertex operators which correspond to those cohomology classes. And the point about a string theory is once you know the external states, that's all you need to know. Locally, the string is always freely propagating, and the world-sheet topology takes care of the interactions. You don't need to specify how the states themselves interact. Now, for twister theorists, this is great because it offers a new approach to that main problem that I was talking about, of not knowing how to incorporate interactions properly. In string theory, you don't need to specify the interactions separately. For string theorists, a nice idea about this is that by using the Penrose transform, if you construct a string theory whose target space is twister space, then we'll see it has to be essentially stringy. The string has to be able to wrap things in the twister space. So it's certainly not a particle theory. But nonetheless, using the Penrose transform, you can connect that directly to four-dimensional physics. And there are no alpha prime corrections, and there are no Kaluza-Klein modes. No alpha prime corrections because what you're getting is essentially a topological string. There are no Kaluza-Klein modes because there's no extra compact space. The target space is pure and simple twister space, and that's it. So this is a new way to potentially connect string theory to four-dimensional physics. It's very different from the normal story. And for field theorists, the main motivation is, as I said before, that if you can understand what the twister string theory is suggesting or giving you insight to, this will give you lots of new ways of tackling space-time field theories. And certainly to date, most progress in the field has certainly come from this last area here. I mean, this is work that Freddie's been very, very closely involved with. And that's the thing that's done the most, but it's not what I'm going to talk about today. Today I'm going to talk more about constructing the twister string theories themselves. Now, there are two original models of this twister string. There was one proposed by Witten, which initially I think he probably just wanted an open B model. But the open B model, the field theory of that, turned out to be relevant just again to just the purely anti-self dual sector of Yang-Mills theory on space-time. And he didn't want just just anti-self dual Yang-Mills theory, and he saw a way to get around that was to incorporate D instantons. And then Berkowitz, a short time later, came up with an open string system that was based on a first-order world-sheet action, sometimes called a beta-gamma system, that, again, perhaps I'll talk about a bit later. Where there were no extra instantons necessary, there were just world-sheet instantons, and you got the full Yang-Mills theory just from that. And at genus zero, the leading trace part of either of these theories was shown to be equivalent to N equals 4 CP Yang-Mills at space-time. However, there were various problems. And the main problem is a problem that is now famous and everybody knows about, which is that both of these theories contain conformal supergravity. And conformal supergravity is not thought to be a unitary theory, so its presence in twister string theory was, from many perspectives, very unwelcome. But not only was conformal supergravity there, but in both cases, it was there in a slightly surprising way. And it's that I want to get to the bottom of today. So in Witten's model, if you just had the open string sector, if you just had the open B model, it doesn't couple to closed strings. There was no conformal supergravity at that level. The complete field theory was just the holomorphic Chern-Simons theory. So these conformal supergravity modes must have somehow crept in when Witten incorporated these D-instantons to go beyond the anti-self dual sector. But it wasn't particularly clear, at least in Witten's original papers, exactly how that was happening. I mean, it was clear that it was happening at some level, but it wasn't clear how. Likewise, in Berkowitz, although I said it was an open string, it was a rather peculiar open string because the Yang-Mills interactions didn't come from a stack of D-brains on the boundary. They came instead from a current algebra on the world sheet. And the vertex operators so Berkowitz had this picture where, again, you know, you have a sort of traditional open string picture with a boundary on some distinguished submanifold. And you would have thought in normal strings that you get you have some Chan pattern factors, if you like, around the boundary, and they give you a Yang-Mills interaction. And that isn't what happened in Berkowitz's string. Instead, he had a current algebra over the world sheet. And the other peculiar thing was that the gravitational vertex operators were also inserted only on the boundary. They were not inserted at an arbitrary position on the world tree, which is, again, not what you'd expect from a gravitational operator or a closed string mode on a string. Another slightly more technical problem of Witten's model was that he was constructing, although it was a B model, he was constructing it on a target supermanifold. So the B model only makes sense on a Calabi-Yau. P3/4, which is a sort of supersymmetric version of twister space, this P3 is the original PT that I showed before, /4 just means with four supersymmetries. This is a Calabi-Yau supermanifold, but you're trying to have it both ways. You're trying to the B model topological string makes sense on a Calabi-Yau threefold, and it has to be both Calabi-Yau and a threefold for the string really to make sense. So this is Calabi-Yau if you take it not as a threefold, and it's a threefold if you take it not as a Calabi-Yau. But you're trying to have your cake and eat it by taking it as both together. there are other problems with Witten's model which involved D1, D1 strings. So the moment you introduce these D1 instantons or D1 brains, you'd expect a bunch of stuff. You'd expect Witten's open string had D5 brains, so you'd expect open string stretching between those. And he got the non-anti-self dual Yang-Mills interactions from D1, D5 strings. But you'd also expect D1, D1 strings in the model. And they, although Witten knew that they were there and said they should be discussed, he didn't actually discuss them. And as far as I'm aware, nobody has since. So the model itself wasn't completely well defined. And the problem with all of these things, in the Berkovitz picture, although, as I said, he initially had this thing that he thought probably was a D brain filling a real slice in twister space. As we've seen, this isn't really a D brain in the normal sense, because that's not where the Yang-Mills interactions are coming from in Berkovitz's model. So then you have to ask more carefully, what's the role of this RP3/4 inside the complex projective space? And really, that's tying you down to a particular choice of space-time signature. It's tying you down to plus, plus, minus, minus signature. And it wasn't at all clear how, in Berkovitz's model, you could try to go to different space-time signatures, more realistic or places like Euclidean signature, which might, from field theory, might be better defined. Plus, plus, minus, minus is neither realistic nor well-defined from a field theory. So it's the worst possible place to be, really. So whilst I still think that the main problem of the twister string theory is the presence of conformal supergravity, there were sufficient sort of other technical problems to make it unclear how you should go about attacking this first problem. If you want to modify twister strings so as to get rid of conformal supergravity, beat it back down to pure Yang-Mills, or perhaps beat it down to Einstein supergravity, you obviously want to change the string theory somehow, but there are sufficient other slightly funny aspects about the twister string theory that it isn't really clear what the rules of the game are. And by recasting it as a heterotic string, what I want to do is have a completely clear point of view of what twister string theory is. It will still have the problem of conformal supergravity, but it will be clear. So it will be even more clearly wrong. Okay, so what is a twisted heterotic string? So it's based on something called the 0,2 model. And at essence, this is like, you know, all sigma models, it's just a theory of smooth map from Riemann surface into the target space. And together with that, 0,2 means you have n equals 2 anti-holomorphic supersymmetry. And it's going to be twisted. So what that means is I introduce fermions, one valued in the pullback of the anti-holomorphic tangent bundle, the other valued in the pullback of the tangent bundle. And normally, if I was doing physical supersymmetry, both of these would be spinners on the world sheet. But twisted supersymmetry just means that I take this one to be a scalar on the world sheet and this one to be a 0,1 form on the world sheet. Okay, and then again, there are some straightforward supersymmetry transformations which you either know and love, or I'm not expecting you to remember. And because we've twisted the spins of these fields, these supersymmetry charges are scalars. These supersymmetry charges are 0,1 forms. And the most important ones to fix your eyes on are these scalars. And what it's telling us is that Q bar annihilates the holomorphic components, and it turns the anti-holomorphic components into these fermionic guys. It annihilates the fermionic guys themselves. So just looking at this, this, and this, if you view these as sort of a basis of 0,1 forms on the target space, then this supersymmetry generator is acting as if it was the D bar operator on the target space, or really on the space of maps to the target space. Likewise here, Well, let me not mention that. Okay, so the action, the action is the normal thing. It's got the normal sort of harmonic Mach term, and then it's got a supersymmetric completion involving the fermions, and a sort of topological term at the end, just to complete the n equals 2 supersymmetry transformations. And the important point is that apart from the topological term, the entire action can be written as Q bar or something. So we're going to take the Q bar as the BRST operator, and that's going to mean that this action is independent. It's going to be independent of both the choice of this parameter T, the scale in front of the action, and also any particular choice of the metric. And the reason that works is that the action is essentially looking up at this top line. It's it's a minus sign missing here. Minus the action is T times the mod square of the map plus some fermionic contributions. Now, because the action is Q exact, it's independent of this parameter T. The path integral is independent of this parameter T. It's easy to see that because some integral over some fields times the action, but the action is Q bar of something. Okay, so the change in the action with respect to this parameter is can be written like that. The point is Q bar squares to zero, of course, it's a supercharge. And so you bring down Q bar of the action, but this is already Q bar closed because it's Q bar exact, and so it can come inside here. So it's a total derivative. Remember, this is acting like a derivative operator on the space of maps where we're taking this path integral over. So it's a total derivative, and you get zero, assuming there are no boundary terms at infinity. So it's independent of T, and therefore, writing the action this way, if you take T goes to infinity, you can see that the only contributions you're going to get, the partition function is going to be weighted by e to the minus t times the mod square of this map, so only holomorphic maps are going to contribute. It's a 0,2 model, so this turns out to be also invariant under the other supercharge, Q bar dagger, which I'm not going to stress so much. And the condition for that, initially it was thought that the condition for that was that the target space X had to be Kähler. But in fact, there's a generalization, which is you can couple to a so-called B field, and then this form, which would have been a Kähler form, no longer has to be closed, but it has to satisfy this auxiliary condition. And the connection up here, which in the Kähler case would have been the Levi-Civita connection, now has some torsion. The torsion is determined by B field. So there's a generalization. There are other generalizations, which again, in the heterotic string, is completely familiar. You can also couple to some holomorphic bundle over X. And the important thing here is these fields psi and psi bar, which are valued in the pullback of the bundle and the dual of the bundle. And again, I've chosen to twist it so that this guy is a scalar and this guy is now a 1,0 form rather than a 0,1 form. And they have some supersymmetry transformations, which again, I'm not expecting you to remember. And there's an action, which again, just looks like this. And if you've studied your string theory, then this is very familiar because the action I wrote down before plus this action is just a twisted version of the normal heterotic string action on a general background. So there's some curvature of the bundle and there's some fermions as well. Right, so that's sort of the general theory. I now want to apply it to twisted space. So you might think that the best thing to do would be to take the target space to be this supersymmetric, super-Calabi-Yau twister space, P3/4. But there are certain problems with that. So one problem is the original spectrum, the Yang-Mills spectrum, came from functions on twister space which were holomorphic in the size. So we had four size on CP3/4, so you you can expand this up to fourth order in the size, and that means that there are four of these. So this guy represents the plus, well, really minus helicity, minus one gluino, the gluon, sorry. This represents four, this R symmetry index runs from one to four, so we've got four gluinos, and that's the right spectrum for the Yang-Mills. You can carry it on further, and you'll see you'll get completely the right spectrum. If I now start putting in psi bar in there, you'll get completely the wrong spectrum, because you'll have to expand in powers of psi bar as well, and that won't lead to the right spectrum for n equals 4 Yang-Mills. Now, in the original model, in the Witten model, Witten got around that by saying that he was dealing with an open string, or so it appeared, And he said that you have a D-brain at psi bar equals zero, so you can just turn it off, and because it's a fermion, it's independent, setting psi bar equals zero doesn't imply any conditions on psi. But this is now a heterotic string, so we don't have any D-brains, so we can't use that get-out clause. Okay. And the other thing is, as I've said before, it's not really clear how to promote something on a target supermanifold to a string theory, at least not to me. So instead of doing that, I'm going to take the target space just to be normal P3, just the normal CP3 twister space that has been familiar since ages past. But to compensate for the fact that I haven't got this supersymmetric piece, I'm going to include a bundle on there, which is four copies of O1. Now, the reason for choosing that bundle is that phi is a section of this bundle. So in other words, I've got four scalars which are fermionic, and they all have the same scaling. O1 just means something that has the same scaling as the homogeneous coordinates of CP3. So I've got four fermionic sections of O1. So these are exactly the same fields as Witten had in the supermanifold. However, because I twisted it so that my size, the holomorphic size, was scalars, whereas these anti-holomorphic size were one-forms, I've naturally got that the size and the psi bars are on a different footing. So it's not clear that I will avoid this spectrum problem, but it at least makes it possible. Okay. The second thing is that if you take the target space to be P3/4, you have a second order action for the world sheet fermions. It just comes as part of the sigma model, the harmonic map. Here we have a first order action for the size and psi bars, which is more reasonable. There are some other technical advantages as well. That's correct. And of course, that has problems, and I'll talk about it. So although I'm sort of emphasizing now that I'm taking this, in fact, I think really the proper picture is you can choose to do either one. And certainly at the level of the non-zero modes, when you integrate those out of the path integral, you find that the answer you get is exactly the same in either picture. The zero modes are more difficult to handle if you work in the supermanifold picture, but I think you can make it equivalent. Of course, the price, so the zero modes are easy to handle in the P3 case, and they give you the answer that you want. Of course, the price you have to pay for that is the target's not clear yet. Yes. Why? I have 0,2 supersymmetry on the world sheet. So, I mean, certainly at the classical level, and I'll show it at the quantum level later. Okay, so what are the observables in the theory? Well, the main point is that the anti-holomorphic components of the stress tensor are Q-exact themselves. They're BRST trivial. And that implies that all the Virasoro generators, sorry, all the anti-holomorphic Virasoro generators are likewise Q-exact. So we want to find the BRST closed operators, or the operators in the BRST cohomology, where the BRST operator is this Q bar. Now, the point is that if this is an eigenstate, if this has definite anti-holomorphic conformal weight, in other words, it's an eigenstate of L bar zero with some weight, then because this operator is Q bar exact, I can rewrite this equation, just plugging that in place of L bar zero, and then there's some Jacobi identity you can use, which turns this thing into a piece which is Q bar exact, and a piece which is manifestly zero because we were interested in operators that were Q closed, that were BRST closed. Okay, so if H bar isn't zero, you can divide through by H bar and conclude that this operator must be Q bar exact. In other words, it must be trivial in the BRST cohomology. So the BRST cohomology is trivial except for operators which have anti-holomorphic weight zero. Of course, this is a familiar story from the A and the B model. And in the A and the B model, the difference is we'd have 2,2 twisted supersymmetry. So we'd have exactly the same story going on in the holomorphic sector for all the holomorphic Virasoro operators. And we'd again find that only the operators with holomorphic weight zero are allowed. But in this heterotic picture that I'm talking about, there's no holomorphic Susie on the world sheet. And so any value of H is allowed. And in fact, this is the full structure of all of these operators that you get with arbitrary positive values of holomorphic weight has been studied by Witten and Nekrasov and others, and it's known in the mathematics community as a sheaf of chiral algebras over the target. But in fact, that's much too rich for what we need for twister string theory, and we'll see how to cut it down to size in a minute. An important consequence of the fact that the anti-holomorphic stress energy tensor is Q exact, but the holomorphic stress energy tensor isn't, is that the 0,2 model is not a topological field theory. It's holomorphic, so if I place an operator if I place a vertex operator in on the world sheet of the string, it matters only what the holomorphic coordinates of that vertex operator are. But it isn't independent of the position, as it will be in the A or the B model. You're not allowed to move your vertex operator around on the world sheet of the string completely freely. But actually, that's the correct thing for twister string theory. Although people always talk about the B model and it being topological theory, in fact, twister string theory can't come from a topological string. And you know that just by looking at the MHV amplitudes. So the MHV amplitudes, the Yang-Mills scattering, look something like this. And these factors here are precisely just points on a P1, the positions of your vertex operators on the P1. So the actual answer that you know you want from just field theory calculations, gauge theory calculations, tells you that you do need to know about the holomorphic coordinates of the vertex operators. So you don't want a topological field theory. And you never had one, even in the B model, once you coupled to the instant one. Okay, so I said that all operators with all values of all positive values of H are allowed, but I'm now going to focus just in on a very special class. And at the moment, this is going to seem totally arbitrary, but the special class I'm going to pick is just those operators whose holomorphic weight is 1, and also whose ghost number under the BRS key charge is also 1. So you write down all the operators you can think of that have holomorphic weight 1 and ghost number 1. So to have ghost number 1, they have to involve a power of rho bar, this 0,1 form on the target space. And to have holomorphic weight 1, they can either be a derivative of a field of holomorphic weight 0, or there was another field, this psi bar, which I said was a 1,0 form on the world sheet, so that also has holomorphic weight 1. So those are the only operators you can construct. Just tie up all the indices in the only ways you can. Okay, so now, and the first important fact is that because psi was a scalar, it has holomorphic weight 0, and so these functions m, b, beta, and mu, not only can they depend on the map, phi and phi bar, but they can also depend on psi, because all I've said so far is that it has to have holomorphic weight 0. However, they have to be independent of psi bar, because this already has holomorphic weight 1. I've taken account of the one possibility of including a psi bar there. So before what I said about choosing psi and psi bar to be on a different footing would help me cure this problem of the spectrum if you included a psi bar in there, we're seeing that this is how it's working now. We're not allowed to sneak powers of psi bar into those functions because it would ruin the holomorphic weight, but we are allowed to sneak powers of psi into the functions. Now, if I just focus on this guy for a minute, at the moment I've just written down any old operator, you can prove that it's a non-trivial class in the BRST cohomology, provided this M here represents an element of this cohomology group. So it's locally a 0,1 form with values in the tangent bundle. Okay. And this cohomology group corresponds to deformations of the complex structure infinitesimal deformations of the complex structure on the target space, twister space in this case. And then if you expand out the psi, this guy in powers of psi, you get some supersymmetric completion of that. Now, infinitesimal deformations of the complex structure on twister space are related by the Penrose transform to gravitons of particular helicity, gravitons of helicity minus 2 on space-time. So this is somehow a gravitational multiplet here in this vertex operator, and it's got some sort of supersymmetric extension. You can prove that this, with n equals 4 supersymmetry, there isn't a single gravitational multiplet because you can't get from helicity plus 2 to helicity minus 2 just with 4 supercharges. So there are actually 2 separate gravitational multiplets in n equals 4 supersymmetry, and it turns out that one of them's this, and the other one's this, and these are essentially playing the role of some gravitinos, some extra gravitinos. And you can check that the full spectrum of states that you've got there is precisely n equals 4 conformal supergravity. So n equals 4 conformal supergravity is emerging just by the normal vertex operators of this heterotic string, and it's present from the start and completely out in the open. Okay, so far that's classical. Of course, there are plenty of anomalies that we have to consider. And the first anomalies I'll consider are sigma model anomalies, which would, if they were present, they would kill the theory. And there's a familiar condition for that, which is just the Green-Schwarz mechanism, the difference between the second Chern characters of the target space, tangent bundle of the target space, and the bundle you put in has to vanish. It turns out that if you're dealing with a twisted signal model, where you've twisted the supersymmetry rather than just physical supersymmetry, there's a correction to this Green-Schwarz condition, which looks like that. And you need both of these things to vanish separately, because this is the only thing that depends on the genus of the world sheet. So if you want this theory to be anomaly-free for all genus, you need both of these conditions to hold. But fortunately, for twister space and for this choice of bundle, this condition does hold. You can prove very straightforwardly that all the Chern classes of twister space are equal to their corresponding Chern classes of this bundle. So that both of these conditions do precisely hold for the sigma model that I chose. And a parallel statement is that all the Chern classes of P3/4 vanish. Everyone knows that the first Chern class vanishes, because everyone knows it's super Calabi-Yau, but in fact, all the Chern classes vanish. There are various global symmetries. There's the U1R symmetry, the automorphism group of the supersymmetry algebra. And the anomaly of that just depends on the difference in the number of zero modes between the row and the row bar. And you get this if you compute the anomaly. There's also a sort of flavor symmetry, which is carried by the psi and the psi bar. And again, the difference in their number of zero modes is this. But this is very interesting. You see, we'll see later that since this is the difference in the number of zero modes, we're going to, in order to absorb this number, in order to get a non-zero answer, you have to insert vertex operators which will soak up all those excess zero modes. Okay, and so we've seen that the vertex operators have power expansions in terms of psi. So this is telling us a relation between the net charge of the net number of psi in your vertex operators and the degree and genus of the curve that the twister string will localize on. It gives you exactly this, which is the same as the sort of famous MHV selection rule, that MHV amplitudes are supported on lines in twister space next to MHV degree 2 curves, things like that. Okay, but it's coming here from a select, well, it's really the same place, but here it's viewed as the selection rule on the bundle. Now, of course, the famous feature that's wrong about taking a target space as non-Calabi-Yau is that the one loop and higher loop beta functions of the theory are non-zero. And so, you know, although you might have written down a CFT at the classical level, you're not guaranteed to have written down a CFT at the non-classical level. Now, here, the fact that we're doing twisted 0,2 supersymmetry comes to your help. Because any correction from higher loop effects to either the anti-holomorphic stress energy tensor or this mixed component, in particular the beta function will be in here, are guaranteed to be Q-bar exact. And the reason that is because they have anti-holomorphic weight. This has anti-holomorphic weight 2, this has anti-holomorphic weight 1, and any operator which has anti-holomorphic weight non-zero was guaranteed to be Q-exact. But the trouble is, of course, there's no such statement for the holomorphic guy. So what that would mean is that the vertex operators depend on your particular parameterization. If this receives loop corrections, then the vertex operators will depend on your particular parameterization of the world sheet, which certainly is not something you want. You want to be able to do holomorphic reparameterizations without affecting it. Now, the correction to this at one loop, the correction to the action at one loop is easy to compute. It's got a normal thing proportional to the Ricci tensor, which would, of course, vanish in the Calabi-Yau case, and a second piece proportional to the curvature of the bundle, which again would vanish for a flat bundle. Now, on P3/4, of course, there's no bundle. If we did the Calabi-Yau case, there's no bundle and this Ricci tensor would vanish, and so there'd be no problem. For P3, the curvature of the Fabini-Studi metric is proportional to the metric, and also the curvature of this bundle is again proportional to the metric. So although this thing doesn't vanish on P3, it turns out to be just proportional again to the classical action. So if this was just the metric and this was basically just a number, that would exactly be the classical action. So it turns out that the one-loop corrections are again proportional to the classical action. But I've already said that rescaling the classical action doesn't make any difference to operators in the Q cohomology. So you're safe, precisely because of the high symmetry of these spaces. So again, even at the quantum level, this twister string is a holomorphic CFT, provided you only study operators that are Q-closed. Okay, so that's this at the level of the sigma model. We now want to promote the sigma model to a string theory. So there's a standard trick for how to do that in the A or the B model. Because of the relation on the supercurrent and the stress tensor with the supercharge Q, this thing plays the role of the B ghost, or the B bar anti-ghost. And in the A and the B model, you'd have one of these for both the B ghost and one for the B bar ghost. But in a 0,2 model, again, of course, you only have one for the B bar ghost. So at the moment, there's no way to promote the sort of holomorphic sector to a string theory. So we do the obvious thing, which is just to include a holomorphic BC system, just as you would in a physical hydrogenic string, exactly the same fields as there. And then, of course, there's the normal BRST operator Q, which is exactly the sort of bosonic string or heterotic string holomorphic Q. And although I haven't stressed it before, there's no descent chain. There's no way of going between fixed vertex operators and completely integrated vertex operators just using this Q bar, precisely because it only introduces 0,1 forms. So you can only go up to a 0,1 form. You can't get to a 1,1 form, which would be something you could integrate over the Riemann surface. But now you've got this operator as well. You can do that, so that you can move completely between, there's a 1-to-1 correspondence between integrated vertex operators and fixed vertex operators. Now, the vertex operators that you want in the string theory are precisely sigma model vertex operators whose holomorphic weight is 1, contracted with a C ghost. That's exactly the cohomology of this guy. That's how you would always construct vertex operators in you know, even the bosonic string. You look for vertex operators in the sigma model of holomorphic weight 1 and contract them with the C ghost, which has holomorphic weight minus 1, which is this tangent model. Okay, so although before in the level of the sigma model I stressed that I could have had any value of H and I just singled out the values of H equals 1 arbitrarily, once you lift it to a string theory in this way, those are the only vertex operators you've got left. So the physical string states now, really of the string, are the states of n equals 4 conformal supergravity. Now, in order for that holomorphic supercharge in order for that holomorphic BRST operator to be nilpotent, you need the central charge, the net central charge, to be 0. And that means we need to introduce some more holomorphic current algebra which contributes central charge 28. The 28 is to balance the 26 from the BC system, and then there's, you can think of it as on P3/4, so this number from the bundle and this number from the target space. The O1's the fourth bundle and the target space. Okay. So one way to try to do that, which is really very closely connected with what Berkowitz did, is to introduce another set of fermions, which are now genuinely spinners on the world sheet, coupled to some holomorphic bundle E, a new holomorphic bundle on the target space. And now because I haven't twisted these guys, conformal invariance really requires that the first Chern class of this bundle is 0. And sigma model, freedom from sigma model anomalies, we've already got a balance between the second Chern character of the target space and the second Chern character of the bundle I had, O1 to the fourth, before. So now I need that the second Chern character of this bundle vanishes as well. And this means that E corresponds to a zero instanton space-time bundle. So this condition here just means it corresponds to some bundle on space-time. This condition, together with this condition, then means that that bundle must have zero instanton numbers. So this was a fact that was actually well known in the original twist of strings, that the theory you got out was equivalent to Yang-Mills, but only at the perturbative level. But it wasn't clear why the theory you put in really was Yang-Mills at the perturbative level. It wasn't clear why that bundle had to be free of instantons. Here we're seeing it as a condition really just coming from the Green-Schwarz condition. Of course, including these extra vertex operators now, including these extra fields now gives me some extra vertex operators of holomorphic weight 1. To get holomorphic weight 1, I just pair these two guys. And then that's, of course, just now gives me the states in n equals 4 super Yang-Mills. Again, this function A here can depend on the size. Now, I emphasize this instanton business, the fact that the anomalies tell you that it has to be free of instantons, because we've seen where it comes from, the Green-Schwarz condition, we can see how to modify it. So how do you modify the Green-Schwarz condition? Well, in the physical heterotic string, on a 10 manifold, there are NS brains, well, there are always NS brains which couple magnetically to this B field. And in the physical heterotic string on a 10 manifold, these things, these are NS5 brains. If you go through the calculation on a target space which is a complex threefold or a real 6-manifold, you find that the NS brains are one plus one-dimensional. They're complex one-dimensional. And if you consider the twisted string in the back, well, the heterotic string in the background of these NS brains, you modify the Green-Schwarz condition. You've got the same contributions as you had before, but now you have a contribution from the Poincaré dual of another Schwarz brains, and it tells you that this modification has to be 0. So in the twister string case, again, these two things cancel automatically. So it now tells you, in the presence of this background, that the second Chern class of the bundle can't be zero, but it in fact has to balance the homology class of these number Schwartz braids. And in fact, this is something that's already known in the twister picture, because as I say, these things wrap complex curves in the twister space. They're two real dimensional. So the connection between Yang-Mills instantons in spacetime and holomorphic curves in twister space has actually long been known. And if you, in particular, pick the basic Twuft ansatz for an SU2K instanton, a multi-centered K instanton of Yang-Mills theory, then, okay, which has this form and this, then the point is that what you're supposed to do in the twister space is, it seems, wrap number Schwartz brains on the positions here, these xi, the lines corresponding to xi in twister space. The lambda I also come in because you need to choose a sort of scaling for these lines that you've wrapped in twister space. And you reproduce, this is old work by Atiyah and Ward, you reproduce the Twuft instanton ansatz and generalizations of that from combinations of lines or even higher order curves in twister space. And that's exactly what we're seeing as the role for these NS braids. Now, I said that the central charge of the current algebra had to be 28. But that actually leads to a puzzle if we compare it to the physical heterotic string. So in the physical heterotic string, of course, the current algebra has to contribute central charge 16. And if you knew nothing about the string theory, but you knew about the field theory, there was a calculation by Green and Schwartz of n equals 1 super Yang-Mills coupled to n equals 1 supergravity in 10 dimensions, and it showed that the only anomaly-free gauge groups were these four. Now, central charge 16 sits very well with this SO32 or the E8 cross E8 gauge bundles, because the rank of these is both 32, and for central charge 16 for fermions, that's exactly half the rank. So you'd expect to have very nice representations of these two gauge groups. And indeed, if you calculate the true constraint, which is modular invariance of the heterotic string, you do find precisely these two gauge groups as possibilities for supersymmetric strings in 10 dimensions. In the twister string, we found that the central charge you need is 28. And there was a puzzle which was originally pointed out by Berkowitz and Witten, which is that Romer and von Neumannhausen did a calculation in the field theory, and they found, sort of analogous to this Green-Schwartz result, that the possible gauge groups for n equals 4 conformal supergravity coupled to n equals 4 super Yang-Mills in 4 dimensions, these are the only two possible gauge groups. Now, nobody has yet done any calculation of modular invariance in twister string theory, but it's clear that there's going to be a real difficulty here, because these are very, very small gauge groups, very low rank, and that's a very, very large central charge. And in fact, you can show that there's no Sugawara current, there's no Sugawara construction of this current algebra which will give you that central charge for those gauge groups. So, this indicates that there could well be a problem with making any of the twister strings modular invariant. I should emphasize that in the original Berkowitz and Witten twister strings, although they were aware of this problem of the central charges, it wasn't clear to them where in their construction it would actually bite. Whereas in this heterotic construction, it's completely clear that it's going to be modular invariant. So there are various suggestions, which I won't go into, of how you might try to get around that constraint. But however you get around it, it's clear from our point of view that modular invariance is going to be the key test. I'm sort of running out of time, so we can prove the essential content of this slide is that we can prove that the correlation functions you get constructed in the obvious way out of Beltrami differentials and the genuine B ghost and the sort of effective B bar ghost and your vertex operators are exactly the same as the correlation functions that you get in either Witten's model or the Beam model or Berkowitz model. And the contour, the path integral has to be treated as a contour integral. You really see that in the heterotic picture because there's an anomaly there's a global anomaly which is not absorbed by all the vertex operators, and the way to absorb it is to treat the thing as a contour integral. Now, if we think about the effective action if we think about doing the path integral of the heterotic string, then at degree d on degree d, if you integrate out all the non-zero modes, you get a determinant of the d bar operator from the bundle, and you get determinants of d bar operators from the harmonic map point of view. It cancels with various other things, and you find that the net effect of both the map and the O1 to the fourth bundle is just the effective, the D bar bundle on the normal bundle to your chosen curve in supersymmetric n equals 4 super twister space. So even if you'd started with this picture of P3 with an O1 to the fourth bundle, by the time you've integrated out all the non-zero modes, you're still essentially talking again about the supersymmetric twister space. Okay, and then we're just supposed to integrate this thing over the space of the zero modes, which is the space of genus G degree D curves in twister space, and that just is supersymmetric space-time at genus zero and degree one. Right. And the point is that this expression is very familiar if you study the heterotic string. So if you're studying the heterotic string in a traditional context where you're compactifying on a Calabi-Yau across R4, then you get expressions of precisely this type from, and they describe instanton corrections to the four-dimensional superpotential. They're normally thought of as very dangerous effects in the heterotic string that destabilize your Calabi-Yau vacuum. And there, the point will be that this curve will be a curve inside the Calabi-Yau, and again, this will be the bundle over the Calabi-Yau, the normal bundle to the curve in the Calabi-Yau. And the zero mode, well, the curve would typically be isolated inside the Calabi-Yau, at least in favorable circumstances, it would be isolated inside the Calabi-Yau. But you've now got an R4 because you're on Calabi-Yau across R4. So the place over the R4 that you're sitting can move, so you'd have an integral over V4X. There are also some fermion zero modes, so you'd end up with an integral over Chiron-Minkowski space, n equals 1 Chiron-Minkowski space, of an object like this, which means this is a correction to the superpotential in four dimensions. Here, we're getting exactly the same type of expression, but it's interpreted in a totally different way. So we don't have an extra R4 factor, but the curves aren't isolated in the twister space. There's a moduli space of curves in the twister space. So you get exactly the same sort of object integrated over the space of curves in twister space. And in earlier papers with Lionel and Rutger-Burls, one of the things we did is develop a technology for taking expressions like this that are evaluated in over the moduli space of curves in twister space and reducing that down to a standard action in space-time. One thing to say is that if you ignore this exponential factor and you ignore this determinant factor down here in the denominator, just keep the one in the numerator, and if instead of determinant of d bar, you add log of the determinant of d bar, then the action you get is precisely n equals 4 super Young mils. So that's somehow what you would need. If you wanted a twister string which gave precisely and exclusively n equals 4 super Young mils, what you need to get out of this effective instanton contribution is log of the determinant of d bar operator. But I don't know any string theory that does that. All the twister strings, any construction of twister strings actually gives you this. And these other modes are precisely responsible for the conformal supergravity. I just want to say, just in the last couple of minutes, something about finite deformations. So these vertex operators that we've got, remember this one contained one helicity state of the graviton, and it corresponded to an infinitesimal deformation of the complex structure. Now, you can ask the question, what happens if you make a finite deformation of the complex structure? And precisely the answer to that is the nonlinear graviton construction that I spoke about right at the beginning of the talk, where you've got twister spaces which are smoothly equivalent to the standard twister space, but their complex structure is sort of finitely different, and they correspond to space-times which are not conformally flat, but are anti-self-dual, four-dimensional space-times that are anti-self-dual. I gave some examples at the beginning of the talk. And the big problem originally in twister theory was, well, what do you do about theories that are not anti-self-dual? They didn't know how to exponentiate the other helicity state of the graviton. Well, now you see in the string theory, we've now got a vertex operator that contains this other state of the graviton. It contains it inside the B field. But the difference between this is, whereas one of the gravitons was sitting sort of at the top, at zeroth order in the psi expansion of M, the other helicity state of the graviton sits at highest order at the psi expansion of B. But the point is that this now gives you a rationale for asking the question, what does this other graviton actually deform? You see, the point was, it was always obvious to twister theorists that the one state of the graviton was related to deformations of the complex structure, and therefore it was clear that what you want to do if you want to make include a coherent background of them was to do a finite deformation, but it was never clear what this state corresponded to a deformation of. In the twister string theory context, it corresponds to a deformation of the B field. And so the question to ask is, what do you get from finite deformations of the B field? Well, you can rephrase that question because, as I say, these vertex operators can be related to integrated vertex operators that you add to the action. And because of the way they're constructed by the descent procedure, those deformations will always preserve the supersymmetry that you have, the 0,2 supersymmetry you can have. So another way of rephrasing this question is, what's the most general target space you can write down for an n equals 2 sigma model? And the answer to that nowadays is no. It used to be thought that it was a complex manifold, but nowadays it's known that it's a generalized complex manifold, since a complex manifold with torsion. I won't go into the details, but a generalized complex manifold, you essentially treat the tangent bundle and the cotangent bundle on the same footing. So whereas a normal complex structure would be a map from just the tangent bundle to just the tangent bundle, which squares to minus one, and correspondingly an induced map from just the cotangent bundle to just the cotangent bundle, on a generalized complex manifold, you have a map from the sum of these to the sum of these. But it doesn't necessarily preserve your elements. So if I put a vector into here, I might get back some combination of a vector and a one form. I don't necessarily just get back a vector. And then there's a sort of distinguished subbundle. So what are holomorphic objects in the normal case? Well, holomorphic objects are a sort of half-dimensional, you know, half of the real vectors are holomorphic. They're the things which, when acted on with I, just give you when you act on with this complex structure in the normal case, just give you I times the original vector. And the complex structure is normally integrable, provided those things are closed under the Lie bracket, which means that the Neuenhaus tensor vanishes. In the generalized complex structure, you have exactly the same thing. You now have a distinguished half-dimensional subbundle, not of just the tangent bundle, but of T plus T dual. And this thing is preserved under a sort of generalization of the Lie bracket known as the Courant bracket. So from the twister string perspective, the most exciting question for a twister theorist is that it may well be that generalized geometry can be used to solve this googly problem, the problem that has plagued twister theory for so many years. I had a few more transparencies on the relation of the heterotic model to Berkowitz and Witten, but I'll skip over that. The discussion of those transparencies I've just discussed is that all of these models are really equivalent. So the entire B model plus D1 instantons plus D5 brain system in Witten's B model picture is precisely equivalent just to the perturbative heterotic string. These D1 instantons of Witten's B model, these things are nothing other than just the world sheet instantons of the heterotic string. The relation to the Berkowitz is, if you know your cohomology, it's a bit like the relation between Dolbo cohomology and Czech. Well, it's exactly the relation between Dolbo cohomology and Czech cohomology. So the supersymmetry that the world sheet supersymmetry we've been constructing in the heterotic thing gave us a D bar operator. Gave us a D bar operator, which tells you you're dealing with Dolbo cohomology. In Berkowitz's formulation, you don't have any world sheet supersymmetry, but you don't have any anti-holomorphic variables either. The world sheet fields are entirely holomorphic functions of the target space, and that's really dealing with Czech cohomology. And there are various advantages and disadvantages of those two pictures. So just to summarize, the outstanding problems, there's the one I mentioned, which is modular invariance and reconciling that with this constraint on the central charge of the current algebra. Although we understand how, in principle, to calculate the amplitudes, and the most progress was made by Roybands, Spradlin, and Volovich in actually doing that integral, doing that contour integral, they used some sleights of hand to get the answer. So essentially, they treated it as a real integral for part of it, and then halfway through the derivation, they changed their minds and said, oh, really, it shouldn't have been a real integral. But really, it should be a contour integral, and nobody's actually done it as a proper contour integral. It would certainly be nice to do that. As I said, a more ambitious one is to understand the role of generalized geometry and finite deformations of the structures on twister space. And more ambitious still, you might want to change, now that we have a well-defined framework for what the original twister string theories really are, well-defined and familiar to string theories, you might want to have a go at experimenting with changing this model so as to cut conformal supergravity down to Poincaré supergravity. See, the point is, conformal supergravity really just contains a doubling of all the modes in Einstein supergravity. So for every state in the spectrum of Einstein supergravity, you have two in conformal supergravity. One is the original one, and another one has exactly the same properties, except it's tachyonic. So what you want to do is try to impose some extra conditions on the theory so as to remove those tachyonic modes. This is the geometric structure that it's sort of known that would incorporate. And you may want to go even further and try to eliminate all of the supergravity modes and just get down to n=4 CPN mils. I think I roughly understand, well, at least I understand the right sort of area to be probing for this. This, I'm afraid, I don't understand at all. I'll stop there.
Any questions?
And then let's thank the speaker.
Yeah.